Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's political podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast and I'm joined by Jane Forsyth and Katie Balls. So the papers today are full of yet more allegations of anti-Semitism within the Labour Party. James, what does this mean for Corbyn?
This story is gathering pace and it is not going away because Jeremy Corbyn, in all those years before he became leader of the Labour Party, spoke frequently at events at which people said things which pretty clearly like they fall foul of the International Holocaust Remembrance Association definition of anti-Semitism. In particular, the controversy is that critics say that the Labour Party has watered down the middle of a code about comparing Israel to the Nazis. Jeremy Corbyn appears to have booked a room for an event in Parliament called From Auschwitz to Gaza on Holocaust Memorial Day, which seems to be a pretty clear comparison of Israel to the Nazi government. And it's emerged today that Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell both in the past proposed renaming Holocaust Memorial Day to Genocide Memorial Day. Now, you can say that we should commemorate all genocides, and that's obviously accurate, but the Holocaust was an event unique in its evilness, I think, in history, partly because of a kind of the systematic industrial nature of the attempted destruction of a particular ethnic group. And I think the fact that Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell want to rename it does tell you something, and it tells you something about why the Jewish community is so concerned about the Labour Party under Jeremy Corbyn's leadership.
Katie, has Corbyn responded to any of this yet?
So after one report earlier in the week about him appearing at an event alongside someone who had denied those things worried the Jewish community, he said that he apologised for any offence caused and that he, with hindsight, he would have been more careful about who he appeared on various platforms with. So I think that was, I wouldn't call that, you know, really, you know, grabbing the crisis that's currently in his party and trying to take decisive action. But I think it did show that they felt things were getting to a point that he had to do something. I think what's quite interesting with this particular outbreak of, you know, a Labour anti-Semitism row, which is all too common. I feel like we talk about this on this podcast every couple of weeks. But from speaking to various people across the Labour spectrum, it feels slightly different in the sense that you're seeing the factions within Corbyn's side of the Labour Party, so where you want to call it the hard left, those on the left, do not centre left, they are not in agreement on this problem. They don't agree on how to respond to it. And you've seen Momentum, which is a grassroots group that supports Jeremy Corbyn. They've withdrawn support from Pete Wilsman, who was one of the candidates who earlier in the week was recorded, saying that actually these members of the Jewish community who raised problems were Trump fanatics. So they no longer are endorsing him as a Momentum-backed candidate. But yet, it does seem that there are some in the Labour Party who are still supporting him. And Jenny Formby, the General Secretary of the Labour Party, who is a key Corbyn ally, has decided not to launch, you know, a full investigation into his behaviour. Instead, he has apologised and given a light slap on the wrists. Meanwhile, Margaret Hodge, the Labour MP who has questioned the anti-Semitism code, is under investigation. So I think it is exacerbating tensions that normally we don't see so much of.
Katie, the Times today splashes on these allegations that the Home Office turned a blind eye to the abuse of British teenagers by handing visas to the foreign husbands that they have been illegally forced to marry. What do you make of that?
Yeah, this looks at the beginnings of what could come to be quite a big scandal, and which is basically the paper has alleged that there's been a problem here where there have been forced marriages where British teens have been married to men from countries like Pakistan, Bangladesh, and these men have been granted visas to come and be with their wife. Obviously, if they are married and it's all consensual, that would seem perfectly reasonable. But the point is that these young brides may have lobbied or said they don't actually want their partner to come here. And in this case, they're saying around half of the visas, you know, have been approved. So I think it's one to look at. I mean, Sajid Javid has been there in such a short amount of time, and you know, like the long scale, that it would be interesting to see if this is something that he wants to take up and kind of root out the problem and make a flagship thing if it is the case.
I think this Time story is an example of the kind of problems of the immigration system, and also this broader problem of people being taken out of the country at a very young age to be married to someone who they have not met before, and then coming back here, and then obviously the spouse then over time becomes entitled to a visa, settlement rights and all this. I think this is something that successive governments have tried and failed to deal with. I did think reading the Times story today that it was more evidence of the ineptitude of the Home Office bureaucracy rather than some kind of deliberate government policy to allow this to happen. I mean, I think one of the big challenges for Zadra Javid is the kind of just the sheer kind of basic competence level of the Home Office. You see this again, you know, of how it fails to deal with problems or creates problems, as it did in the case of the Windrush scandal, when there needn't be one.
Yeah, and it's such a big brief that a lot of the time people say actually the sheer size of the Home Office means it's very hard to get a grip on it. That's why it has, you know, a reputation for being where, you know, once bright careers come to die. So I think it'd be, again, can he get a grip on it? And also it's a point because obviously with Brexit is a chance to re-examine our immigration system, re-examine the way we do some of these things. So you'd like to think it might mean that the government have a magnifying glass on the issues, but you also get with the current way they're handling Brexit that seems optimistic.
I think there's also another opportunity for Sajid Javid here, which is I think that a lot of politicians have struggled with the distinction between a forced marriage and an arranged marriage. Well, obviously, this is kind of complicated, culturally sensitive territory, you know, which is, you know, arranged marriages are regarded as kind of fine under UK law. Forced marriage is obviously a criminal offence. I think Sajid Javid will feel more comfortable making value judgments about this and where one bleeds into the other than perhaps some of his predecessors as Home Secretary would have done.
Finally, Jacinda Ardern, the Kiwi Prime Minister, has returned to work 6 weeks after giving birth to her first child. James, do you think the same thing could ever happen here?
I think this in a way is the kind of final frontier, which is, you know, taking maternity leave from being head of government, you know, saying, right, I'm having a baby now, and see you in a few weeks. I think in a way it is slightly disappointing that she's not felt able to take longer off. I mean, 6 weeks is very, very short. But I think it is an interesting political question as to how the public would react here to a prime minister who was pregnant and then took time off work. We've obviously seen David Cameron took, I think, a couple of weeks of paternity leave when he and Samantha Cameron had a kid when he was prime minister in Downing Street. But I think it would be slightly different if you had a female prime minister and they were taking kind of a protracted period of time off. I think it's an interesting question about how the public would react to that, which I really don't think I quite know the answer.
I also think it's tricky because if you were to take 9 months off, you know, the full maternity leave and say your term, and particularly with some terms, you know, when your premiership looks a little bit shaky, could be less than, you know, 4 or 5 years. You are in theory kind of perhaps giving up 25% of the time you want to enforce policies. I'm not saying that means that it's a bad thing, but it is a real dilemma, I think, and one that we still don't really have an answer to when it comes to women in these high-powered jobs.
I do wonder, though, whether she's felt the need to come back quicker because her male colleague who she left in charge of a shop has been causing all sorts of trouble, telling the Australians that they've copied the New Zealand flag and they must give it up. And I think there's been a kind of minor diplomatic crisis between Australia and New Zealand caused by its kind of rather bellicose statements about this kind of flag theft. So that might be some of the explanation. Yeah.
The tantrum might not have been in the nursery.
Thank you, Katie, and thank you, James. And speaking of politicians and motherhood, there are still a few tickets left for our event with Ruth Davidson. Come and hear Andrew Neil talking to the leader of the Scottish Conservatives on the 24th of September in Westminster. To find out more, go to spectator.co.uk/Ruth. Thanks for listening, and do join us again tomorrow.